Welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report, everybody. I am John Adirola. Oh my God, we've got so much to talk about. I think we're technically behind schedule already, and we're 4 seconds in. Through the course of the show, we're going to give you an update on Donald Trump's recent ravings about the border. And soon, a little bit later on today, there will be ravings at the border as well, because he's going to be going to the border in Texas with Sean Hannity to be interviewed, to be grilled. I think I can boldly predict about what's going to happen with the border. So we've got that. We've got a couple of guests who are going to be joining us. Actually, our first guest is going to be addressing the myth that immigration depresses American wages. That is one of the economic arguments you often hear deployed against immigrants. We're going to be talking about that. And there's actually two bits of myth busting about immigration. There's our first guest, and then a little bit later on the show, an argument about immigrant crime from somebody who should know better. We'll be breaking down the facts behind that. Along the way, we're also going to be talking about a new phase in the assault against Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It has moved to even crazier levels than I would have imagined. I thought it would take a couple of years to get to where it is today. We're going to be talking about something I never thought I would have to talk about, and that is a congressperson's feet. So that's going to come up a little bit later on the show. And then we're going to be joined by Jason Stanley once again, author of How Fascism Works, to talk about fascism in a time of divided government, to try to predict how some presidents might act now that they face a little bit more political opposition in the form of a new Democratic House. But so much to get to, so let's just jump right into it. Donald Trump took some questions from reporters today about the shutdown, about the wall, about his plans and what he wants, and it got a little bit crazy. In that, though, he also took issue with some of the reporting about his meeting yesterday with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, where it was reported that he asked for the wall, they said no, and he stormed out, much like a child would. And he didn't like that, so here is what he said.
The news incorrectly reported, because I said, well, if we go back and everything's peachy-dory and you say we'll talk over 30 days, at the end of 30 days, are you going to give us great border security, which includes a wall or a steel barrier? She said no. I didn't pound on tables. I didn't raise my voice. That was a lie. What you should do is give them Pinocchios, because if you ask Mike Pence and you ask Kevin McCarthy, you ask anybody in the room, they will say, because I know if I do that, you're going to report it. But you guys report it anyway because you're fake news. But let me just tell you something. I very calmly said, if you're not going to give us strong borders, bye-bye. And I left. I didn't rant. I didn't rave like you reported. I mean, some of the newspapers, and then Schumer always has a standard lie. He had a temper tantrum. I don't have temper tantrums. I really don't. But it plays to his narrative, but it's a lie. I very calmly walked out of the room. I didn't smash the table. I should have, but I didn't smash the table.
Oh, this world we live in. Okay, let's start to get into it. Jesus. So first of all, I didn't rant. I didn't rave. He ranted ravingly. He's out of his mind. He is mid-rant. I don't have temper tantrums, he said, mid-temper tantrum. So first off, I think everybody noticed the peachy dory. I don't know what that means. I don't think anyone knows what that means, except that we do kind of know what that means. The president's brain is melting before our very eyes. Okay, it's just, you know, a small little weird thing to say. Okay, I'm actually more bothered, if we're just going to break apart the words, by him saying, I asked for the wall, they said no, so I said, bye-bye. You're the president. You're also an old man, a businessman. There's all sorts of adjectives and nouns and all that that would lead you to believe that he would never interject a bye-bye into a quote that is intended to portray him as an emotionally stable, strong person. Bye-bye. Okay, but he said that. There was a brief little mention in that. I don't know if you caught this, where he, he likes to go off on little tangents or whatever. So he said, I didn't say this stuff. If I didn't, you're going to lie about it, but you're going to lie about it even though I didn't because you're fake news. So if you recall, there was this debate about whether the mainstream media outlets should broadcast his address to the nation. And supposedly executives were talking about, well, if we broadcast it, we're helping to spread his lies. If we don't broadcast it, he's going to call us fake news, which, first of all, bingo, Second of all, he's going to call you that anyway, and it didn't take long. He is right back to calling you fake news after you've provided him with free broadcasting that has resulted in literally millions of dollars being donated to his reelection efforts. So good job there. You were played. He describes, I didn't smash the table. I should have smashed the table, but I didn't smash the table. Again, this response is, you guys said I'm unstable and have temper tantrums. I don't. But man, I really wanted to smash that table. Even a child would know not to reveal that. The Hulk would not reveal that if he was trying to hide his secret identity. But Donald Trump can't pass that bar. So there were other interesting quotes from his little little speech next to the helicopter. So earlier today, he said, he was asked by a reporter, if the buck stops with you over this shutdown, and he responded, the buck stops with everybody. That's a bumper sticker for you. It's an example of buck socialism, odd coming out of this capitalist president. Again, he has managed to maintain this myth that he is an alpha male, a strong guy. His motto is the buck stops with everybody. Everybody. And again, we played the video on yesterday's main show of him saying, if the shutdown happens, I'll take responsibility. Chuck, I'm not going to blame you. It's not about you. I want the shutdown. I'm going to win the shutdown. The buck stops with everybody. It's literally everybody's fault. By the way, everybody includes you, includes Craig over there. The buck stops with you, Craig. I don't know if you know that. Anyway, okay, so yesterday on Twitter, in relation to all of this, I tweeted somewhat sarcastically, a day will come when Donald Trump will say with a straight face that he never once asked for the wall. We're not quite there yet. But just the day after I tweeted that, we did reach a version of it where he said this, I know the fake news likes to say it when during the campaign, I would say Mexico is going to pay for it. Obviously, I never said this. I never meant they're going to write out a check. I said they are going to pay for it. They are. They are paying for it with the incredible deal we made called the United States of Mexico and Canada USMCA deal. So there's a couple of problems there. First of all, he never said Mexico is going to pay for it. Not only did he say it, it became a signature chant of his campaign, of him calling and them responding, all about Mexico paying for the wall. He said it over and over again. He said it in debates. He said it in speeches. He said it before he was president. He said it since he was president. He said it here. He said it there. He said it virtually everywhere. He said it all the time. You know that. I know that. Now, he attempted to create a little bit of an out for himself there, saying, I never said it. I never said they're going to just write a check. It's that they're metaphorically going to pay for it in some other indirect way, but that's not even true. First of all, we know that his audience definitely thought that he meant they're going to pay for it directly, that they're going to write a check, they're going to transfer money, and it will be paid for. There will be a payment made. Not that over time a trade balance will change in some sort of indirect way. Not one person at a Trump rally thought that that's what he was saying. But also, that's not what he was saying. Because as Jake Tapper pointed out, if we could bring up this tweet back from April 5th, 2016, so he has a bit of his transcript from that night's The Lead, where he says, today Donald Trump unveiled his plan to make Mexico pay for his proposed wall. He's asked along the southern border. He says Mexico must make a one-time payment of $5 billion to $10 billion to the United States to construct the wall. And that comes from a two-page memo that the Trump campaign gave to the Washington Post saying, here are different legal things we will strike Mexico with unless they make a one-time payment to fund the wall. So he will attempt to make some sort of out that this is a vague thing, this is about trade deals, all of that. It is not. He specifically said, I want a one-time payment to pay for the wall. Please note that that $5 to $10 billion one-time payment would not actually pay for the wall. It costs far more than that. But that's what he seemed to think would pay for it. So again, that is a ridiculous lie from him. But when we get to the wall, remember, we've moved from concrete to a steel barrier. Very effective steel. You know, steel is very hard. It's one of the hardest substances. Would it actually work? Well, NBC News tweeted this. Department of Homeland Security testing of a steel slab prototype for border wall proved it could be cut through with a saw. And you see there, they've cut a little segment out of it, again, with a saw that a human body could fit through. That was one. They actually tested many prototypes of steel slat barriers. Testing by the DHS in late 2017 showed that all eight prototypes that were tested, including the steel versions, were vulnerable to breaching. So with some sort of big hammer, with a saw, you could get through the concrete, you could get through the steel, you could get through these things. So again, we are going to spend literally billions of dollars. and it could be bypassed by like $25 in a trip to Home Depot, effectively. Donald Trump was asked about that this morning as well, and he says there's nothing that can't be penetrated, but you fix it. But it's a very difficult thing to do. We have many walls under consideration, even concrete. There's acid that can go through concrete, but what you do is you fix it. The wall that we're doing is very, very hard to penetrate. No, that argument is very, very hard to penetrate. You need rhetorical acid to figure out what he's saying there. He is making the case that we should have a wall whilst making the case that walls are easy to get through. So if you still want billions of dollars spent for the wall, there's a good chance that you're a Trump supporter at this point after that sort of argumentation. So look, with all of this nonsense, all of this insanity, I don't know for sure that in a year or two we won't have a wall, and that won't drastically change the situation for migrants, refugees attempting to get through, claim asylum, and things like that. But Donald Trump did actually have some words of advice and encouragement for migrants who might someday come up against his barrier.
Never, ever give up. Don't give up. Don't allow it to happen. If there's a concrete wall in front of you, go through it, go over it, go around it. But get to the other side of that wall.
We're gonna take a short break. We'll be back after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
One of the arguments you often hear deployed against immigration is that were those immigrants to come into America, they would depress American wages. But is that actually true? Is there anything there? Joining us now, Susan Ferris, reporter for Center for Public Integrity. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we're very glad to have you here to break down the facts underlying that argument. So Donald Trump has actually said this. It was part of his address to the nation earlier this week that immigration, especially undocumented immigration, depresses American wages. So what is actually going on?
Yeah, he's used that from the very beginning of when he started running for the presidency. And it really stems from his former attorney general and former senator Jeff Sessions and Stephen Miller. I don't know if you know this, but Stephen Miller was Sessions' aide in the US Senate. And one of the themes that they've focused on heavily is depression of wages. And they make arguments that over decades, immigration, and we're not talking about undocumented immigration alone, but legal immigration has depressed the vast majority of Americans' wages dramatically. And it really is, if you talk to the preponderance of economists, you look at reports, it's not true. Mm-hmm. There's one economist that they have heavily relied on named George Borjas from Harvard, but his models are models, and many other economists take them apart. I would suggest that your viewers, if they're really interested in this, look at the magazine story we did. We did it with Mother Jones, and it's on our website about the cherry picking and distortion of information to make this argument. And Trump continues to use this, and It's really just not true. If you look at the National Academies of Sciences report, which we explore in our big piece on this, economists generally overall think immigration is very good for the economy. It supplies workers for industries that are needy. It supplies growth. It supplies workers for skilled jobs and so-called low-skilled jobs, which if you talk to a lot of farmers or dairy owners, they'll say these jobs actually aren't that low-skilled. You need people to come in from places that actually know how to work with animals or do certain types of hard jobs. That's not to say that there aren't episodic examples of undocumented workers being exploited. That does happen. But to try to create a national scenario of wage suppression really is, it's not fair to do. And it's a rhetorical talking point that Trump has used quite successfully.
So there you described a few of the positive economic benefits from immigration. But in your recent piece, I also read about a few others you began to describe. So and they often are wrapped up in myths against immigration too. So when it comes to contributions to Social Security, those sorts of programs, as well as paying taxes, I often hear immigrants don't pay taxes. That's another way that they're costing America a ton of money. So what is the truth in that situation?
Well, many of them do pay taxes. Undocumented workers is what you're talking about. The accusation comes from that. They're working under fake Social Security numbers. Sometimes there's Social Security numbers that have been taken, put into fake documents, and people are using them. But I've covered this for about 30 years. And from the beginning of after that big amnesty that President Reagan signed, people were taking jobs using made up Social Security numbers. And they pay into taxes and into Social Security. They pay sales taxes like other people. One of the big hits against immigrants is, you know, using public services. In the National Academies of Sciences report, what was found is probably at the state and local level, there's costs that are associated with immigration, with education, because families are younger and they have kids in school. But when you look at the investment in the kids, it then provides a labor force that pays even more into taxes because they're getting educated.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you started to get into there actually as well. I think it's interesting that you have this disparity between this community that in many cases will pay taxes, pay into Social Security, but has no legal ability to access many of the benefits later on from those, which seems like just a net flow of additional support to these programs that we often hear are so in need of extra money. But also, I'm interested in the short versus long-term economic impact. So if you have a family come in over 1 year, 10 years, another generation, what is the difference economically in terms of the impact?
Well, the economists have found that there can be an impact of a few years, perhaps, but that the economy adjusts and absorbs people. Another critical thing to think about with this, and you can see this on the ground, for example, in Idaho, where we went and did a story on a Trump supporting area that's utterly dependent on immigrant workers at dairy farms. Low-level dairy workers who are actually doing the milking of cows, their presence creates jobs for all these other people, creates jobs in factories like a gigantic yogurt factory run by Chobani that's in Idaho, the biggest in the world, creates banking jobs, feed jobs, transportation jobs. And it was funny because there were people in town, the non-Latino residents in town, who seemed drawn to Trump's rhetoric, where they were convinced that they were, you know, immigrants were troublemakers and costly. And they had trouble reconciling the fact that it was true that they were taking jobs that others didn't. It's not so much they didn't want them. They didn't have to take them because they actually had the higher paying jobs that were created from the whole industry.
Yeah. Well, Susan Ferris, I want to thank you both for joining us and also providing a more detailed and at the same time nuanced argument about the economic impact. It gets so oversimplified a lot of the time. We appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, a new sort and style of attack against new Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We will describe that after this. So much to get to, let's jump right back into it. I literally never thought that I would have to talk about a member of the House's feet, but I have been forced into it thanks to BS right-wing media. And so in case you are not familiar with this story, I hope that you did not have to be up until this point. New Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted about why this has become news. She said, "For those out of the loop, Republicans began to circulate a fake nude photo of me. The Daily Caller reposted it and refused to indicate it was fake in the title as well. Completely disgusting behavior from conservative outlets. No wonder they defended Kavanaugh so fiercely." So we're going to return to that later, but I like that she brought it back to Kavanaugh at the end there. So what did they actually tweet at the Daily Caller? Totally reputable right-wing media outlets supported by Tucker Carlson, amongst others. They tweeted, "Here's the photo some people described as a nude selfie of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez," and just randomly chose a photo of her gleefully laughing about what they were intentionally doing to her with that tweet. So they put that tweet up. This is a photo that had apparently been going around. Do you know why it was going around? Because people on the internet make fake nude photos of people. That is a thing that is done. It is done of many politicians, I am sure. You could, if you wanted to, track down and post tweets and news articles about any number of these fake nudes. You don't do that because that's crazy. You do it in this case if you want to sexualize and try to diminish a new representative that has captivated the nation over the course of the past year. That is why you would do that in this case, but not in others. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, of course, recognized a lot of that, saying GOP has been losing their mind and frothing at the mouth all week, so this was just a matter of time. There's also a Daily Mail reporter, Ruth Stiles, going to my boyfriend's relatives' homes and offering them cash for, quote, stories. Women in leadership face more scrutiny, period. She's 100% right there. They also face stuff that is not actually scrutiny, but is just BS arguments against them. I'm going to return to what the Daily Caller, how they attempted to defend themselves. I just want to briefly mention something that I've been talking about recently a little bit about misogyny in politics and how it manifests. Now, there are people who will hate a politician because, or a person in politics, I will say, because they're a woman. That will flip them over to hating the person. But all too often, that's not why you hate a person. Like, there are many right-wingers that despise Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, not specifically or first because she's a woman. They do it for all sorts of different reasons. But she is a woman, and that colors at every step of the way that they hate her, the way that they oppose her, the way that they attack her. So it's not like if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was Alex Ocasio-Cortez, they'd be like, yay for higher marginal tax rates. But if it's a woman calling for a higher marginal tax rate, then maybe a shot of her supposedly in a bathtub needs to be released and we pretend that it's news. So multiple ways that misogyny can interact with politics. So the Daily Caller responded saying, "As soon as editors noticed the Twitter headline, we rapidly had it deleted and fixed. The story itself is otherwise no different from what HuffPo and Vice published. We regret the error as the intent was to inform our audience that a fake image was circulating online." Okay, so first of all, they kept the story up even after that. It has since been taken down, but it was up even after they had finally taken down that tweet. So if we could just briefly go back to the Daily Caller tweet. Remember, they say the intent was to inform our audience that a fake image was circulating online. Okay, so they tweeted, "Here's the photo some people described as a nude selfie of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez." So look, they are not saying, "Here's a nude shot of the congresswoman," but they are also being purposefully oblique about it. And the fact that they chose that shot of her, so happy that she's being sexualized in that way, makes it obviously a joke what they're saying to defend themselves. And their editor-in-chief goes on to say, "As soon as I noticed it, I had it corrected and updated," which is not true. No, you had it corrected and updated as soon as everyone noticed how awful what you were doing was and made us think about it online. "I thought that was that, But apparently a screenshot was out there. The gist of the story, if you read it, was actually a defense of her. The URL is literally fake nude. But you know how the sausage is made with these things. Bad call on the headline side. No, the bulk of it was not a defense of her. Yes, it eventually did identify that this was a fake nude. But you chose to make a news story out of it. Anybody can Photoshop a fake nude photo of literally anyone. Choose a congressman, Duncan Hunter Jr. I could take 5 minutes. I could make a fake news story, a nude shot of him. If I were to put that on Reddit, would they make an article about it on the Daily Caller? Would Breitbart have a headline? Oh, some people are saying this is Duncan Hunter's ass. Would they do that? No, of course they would not do that. They're doing it because it's a woman, and especially because it is a young woman who is captivating people, getting people energized and excited about politics, and they need to take her down. They need to make you think that she is crazy, that she's wild. I heard something about nude shots. Oh, she's one of those millennials sharing her naked body. She should be ashamed of herself. That is what they're doing. And yeah, maybe after it's gone around, after right-wingers have spread it, and after your crazy aunt and uncle have talked about it, maybe then they retract it. We'll see how much play that gets in comparison to the original story. They say there, by the way, this is what HuffPo and Vice did. Okay, if you were going to do a story about this originally, before AOC had to defend herself, I don't think that you should. But you could, and you could do what the congresswoman did. You could show how this is consistent with a party and an ideology that was totally okay with Brett Kavanaugh and all of that. You could talk about misogyny against female politicians. You could talk about the ridiculous standards we have for them. You could do all of that. That's not what they did. They did this as gossip. They did this as titillation to get the right wingers who are really attracted to this congresswoman and know that she hates them. And they're just, oh, they're so torn up about it. But they want to think about these sorts of things. They want to talk about this. That's why on NRA TV, they were talking about how they'd love to date her just briefly. You know, she's too crazy to stay with, but they want to date her. There's this weird thing dwelling in the hearts of Republican men in relation to AOC. That is what they are playing to and attempting to make you disregard her. She's crazy. She's one of those millennials. Don't worry about her at all. At a time when she's driving conversations about finally getting our marginal tax rates back up to the historic standards that led to economic growth in this country. After she's driving a conversation nationally about a Green New Deal and finally doing what we need to do to stop global climate change. All that policy stuff, Daily Caller doesn't have much time for that. But a fake nude, they can make time for that with an article. Okay, with that, let's move to other news. Congressman Steve King of Iowa has long had a reputation as a racist, as a white nationalist, as a white supremacist, and people have defended him. Some Republicans, Ben Shapiro is saying, he's not a racist, you're taking him out of context. Okay, well, let's put him in his specific context of an interview that he just did with New York Times where he says, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? So that is the exact context. You're looking at it right now. He said, white supremacist, how did that language become offensive? I think it's been offensive for a while, honestly. I think that the experience of in America of slavery kind of darkened it a little bit, the whole white supremacy thing. I think the Nazis, that cast a pall over white supremacy. And unfortunately for people like Steve King, some of that has lingered. And some of our unease, our uncomfortableness, the fact that we don't like it, that lingers about white supremacy. People are really, I don't know, they take it really seriously, which is sort of weird. I looked it up, in fact, on dictionary.com to make sure that I wasn't like falsely coming up with a definition for white supremacy. But no, it's a person who believes that the white race is inherently superior to other races and that white people should have control over people of other races. And it's one thing for a random person to think that that's kind of cool or it's unfair that you can't be a white supremacist. But Steve King is a congressman. He has power. He is a current example of the sort of white supremacist politician that created racism, not just in people's hearts for the last 400 years in this country or before it was a country, but in our halls of government, in our policy, in our laws. Jim Crow, the Black Codes, all of that. Institutionalized racism is because of people like Steve King. So I apologize to the congressman if people are a little bit uncomfortable about those sorts of terms after the KKK, after slavery, after all of that. I could go into far greater detail about the things that he's said, but I just want to make clear, he is openly coming out in defense of white supremacy. There is no hiding behind language anymore. There's no equivocation. That was as direct a defense of white supremacy as is possible from a sitting Republican congressman. And coming off of a week where Rashida Tlaib was attacked endlessly for using a curse word and saying that that demeans the halls of Congress, that demeans her, that demeans her family, I expect a commensurate amount of opposition to Steve King. Not as much opposition, not twice as much. She used a curse word. He defended Nazis, okay? So there better be a news cycle for the next week, 2 weeks, month. He better be primaried. He better be taken out of Congress because this dude apparently likes Nazis and doesn't understand why that should be an issue in this country. Okay, we're gonna hopefully talk about that a little bit more tomorrow on our show. For now, we do have to take a break. But when we come back, Jason Stanley is gonna be joining us once again, author of How Fascism Works. Coming off this conversation, I think it's a topic we should talk about. And we will after this. So I believe that we are entering a very dangerous year in terms of our government here in America. And because of that, let's talk fascism for a little bit. We're going to be welcomed on the show once again by Jason Stanley, author of How Fascism Works. Jason, welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you very much, John. Good to be back.
Very glad to have you here. Great conversation last time. I was left with many questions. I want to talk about some of what has changed since the last time you were on the program. So we defined fascism. You talked about how it having quite a bit to do with power and loyalty. Now Donald Trump finds himself with less power, less influence over government, and being faced by a Democratic House majority that is obviously in no way loyal to him. Based on what you know from other examples of fascism that you've studied, how do you think that someone with this sort of authoritarian personality might respond to divided government that he's never faced before?
Well, interestingly, Mr. Trump, although he uses fascist politics, of course, he uses fascist strategies in solidifying support with his supporters, doesn't seem to go as far, and maybe he can't go as far, as authoritarians in other countries, mm-hmm. fascists and non-fascists. So we have had, we do have a vigorous opposition party, as the midterm elections showed. There was a serious worry before the midterm elections that many members of the Republican Party were exhibiting what Hannah Arendt calls loyalty to party over parties, by which she means loyalty to your political party over a multi-party democratic system. Mm-hmm. When you look at countries like Hungary that have destroyed the opposition, there's just the ruling party. And so what we learned from the midterms is we have a vigorous opposition party, and we might have learned that President Trump likes the rhetoric of fascism, but is not actually characterologically going to be as anti-democratic as one might fear from his international friends and from his rhetoric.
Well, I certainly hope that you're right, and I'm glad that you make the distinction between politicking and policy. Obviously, he's much more firmly in the fascist category in the politicking. So why don't we turn to that? I mean, the conversation we're having nationally right now over this shutdown and over a potential national emergency is about a crisis at the border, about the need to have a wall, about immigrants coming to rape you, to murder you, to steal your job. Is that a coincidence that this has been sort of the main rhetorical touchstone of him both as a president and back when he was campaigning?
No, he's consistently governed by vilifying immigrants and adopting the white nationalist, far-right, fascist vocabulary of the European far-right like Guillaume Fay. Now, President Trump himself calls immigrants, illegal aliens. Mm-hmm. And the constant conjoining of immigrants with crime is an old thing. I mean, anytime you're creating an out-group, what you do is you say, immigrants rape, immigrants murder, gangs. Oh, I'm sure some are fine people. Mm-hmm. But then people associate in their heads immigrants with those terrible things, and then they're going to be fine with inhumane treatment of them. But I think one of the most important things to focus on right now is the claim of a national emergency. We know from the history of fascism, from the work of figures like Carl Schmitt, the Nazi political theorist, that the emergency is the anti-democratic moment. What is an emergency? It's when you can call off the rules. Mm-hmm. And so we always have to worry, not just with Mr. Trump, but we certainly had to worry under the Bush administration after 9/11 with Vice President Cheney, of leaders who are inclined to call off democratic rules on the basis of emergencies, because that is authoritarianism 101.
Yeah, and it is interesting that an emergency sort of implies that there's no time for the legislature. We need emergency powers. It's coincidental that that state started a couple of days before the new Democratic majority was inducted into Congress. So that's interesting how that worked out.
Absolutely. So that would be a worry. The worry would be, I mean, it's a classic move, a Reichstag fire moment, which is how the Germans, the Nazis did it, to declare an emergency and seize power. And President Trump has talked like that, but he hasn't actually done anything like that. I mean, is it because our democratic institutions are strong, or is it because President Trump is more attracted to the rhetoric and is going to be less fearsome than his rhetoric suggests? We don't know. But yes, calling off democratic rules in the case of emergency is the very thing we should be most afraid of.
There was an element of your work and our past conversation that I wanted to return to that I found fascinating, and that was how lying, even crazy lying, obvious lying, can be a demonstration of power for a fascist. And I bring that up because this morning Donald Trump said to all of the reporters, I never said that Mexico would pay for the wall, which I find to be an interesting statement. So could you explain for the audience how lying is used by fascists?
So one of the worries, even if, as I believe, Donald Trump is not ruling as a fascist, the rhetoric is tearing apart our democratic culture. A democracy relies on truth. It relies on mutual respect for truth. That's what speaking truth to power means. That's what equal respect is. So if you're going to destroy a democratic culture, you want to destroy respect for truth. It used to be if a politician was caught lying, politicians have always lied. That's what they do. One of the things they do. So that's not new. But there's been, in a democratic culture, there's a penalty. What Mr. Trump is trying to do is he's trying to destroy, and he's largely succeeded, destroy any penalty for lying. So no one cares at all. They just think everyone lies, but he has our interests at heart. Look at how he toys with them and how when he explicitly lies, when he engages in what Timothy Snyder calls implausible deniability. Like plausible deniability is when you say, I'm a nationalist, but only an economic nationalist. Mm-hmm. implausible deniability is when you say, I never said what you have me on film saying. And his supporters know it's a lie, but they get off on it. They get excited about it. They get behind it because it's a demonstration of his power. What you want to do in fascist politics is replace truth just by loyalty to you and your political party. And so you want people to think, it doesn't matter. Look at my guy go. Look at him mock the own the libs, as they say. Yeah. Look at him mock the opposition. He really has my interests at heart. He's my guy. It doesn't matter what he does. Reality doesn't matter. The whole system is corrupt. And so, of course, he's going to lie. So there's a great paper called The Authentic Appeal of the Lying Demagogue by researchers, by Ezra Zuckerman and colleagues at MIT. And what they show is that if you can convince people that the system is corrupt, that the game they're playing is corrupt, then they will think that the person who's openly cheating and lying is the more authentic person.
Oh, that is fascinating. I wish that everything you just described there, I wish the media would hear that and understand that, because that could potentially help a lot going into this next election. Jason Stanley, author of How Fascism Works, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, more lying for you, actually. And this, again, has to do with immigrants. Right-wingers making the case against all the studies, all the evidence, all the facts that they commit more crimes than native-born Americans. We'll break down that. We'll respond with the truth after this. There are a ton of lies about immigration, about immigrants. We can't respond to all of them, but sometimes the lies are so obvious, so insidious, that they do need to be responded to. And this time, it actually produces a new garbage person. This is Tucker Carlson. You might have seen him before. This is what he looks like. This is literally what he has always looked like, every second of every day since he was a child. That same expression. He is a garbage person. And in this clip, I'm going to describe exactly why. There he goes. You'll see what happens to this at the end. So he was talking about immigrants recently. Obviously, many people are. And he was surprised by one of the arguments being made by the left. He just didn't understand it, as you'll see.
Now, I saw a lot of people who had the air of authority about them, who really seemed to know what they were talking about, last night claim that every study has shown that illegal immigrants in this country commit crime at a lower rate than native-born Americans. We do this topic a lot, and we're pretty conversant with the social science on it. I've never seen that study. Where are those numbers from?
As we respond to this, bear in mind that Tucker Carlson is not Sean Hannity. Tucker Carlson is not Glenn Beck. Tucker Carlson is one of the reasonable Republicans. You always see these write-ups that like, hey, you might disagree with him, but he's a serious thinker, okay? He's one of the wonks even, certainly persuasive. He knows his stuff. And so there, he tries to continue that appeal, saying, we cover this a lot. We're very conversant with the social sciences. These people who have the air of authority keep asserting, without evidence, that immigrants don't actually commit crimes. Now, this comes several minutes after him talking with that guest, where they lie about the drug trade over the border. We've already broken down the facts on that earlier this week. They lie about how many people are actually coming across the border. They lie about the position and argument of left-wingers about the situation with the border in terms of how many people are going over, saying that the left-wing argument is that literally no one crosses the border illegally, which is an interesting way to put that argument. So again, this is not just about lies. This is about intentional deceit. Tucker Carlson has so little respect for his audience that he will lie to them about something that he definitely knows. Tucker Carlson, after all, has covered this many times. He says that. He has a big writing staff, a big production staff. He would not say the evidence isn't there and no studies exist. If there were actually studies, certainly they'd find them, except perhaps their internet was down or something, because I searched and I easily found it. It didn't take long. We could do it in real time. It would take about a minute. Here, you want some social science? Here's some social science for you. Article title, why are immigrants' incarceration rates so low? That one's a little bit on the nose, but you get the idea. Evidence on selective immigration, deterrence, and deportation by Kristen F. Butcher and Morrison Peel. That study examined the incarceration rates for men aged 18 to 40 in the 1980, 1990, and 2000 censuses. In each year, immigrants are less likely to be incarcerated than natives, with the gap widening each decade. By 2000, immigrants have incarceration rates that are one-fifth those of the NATO-born. That coming, by the way, from an analysis of this research done by the Cato Institute, a libertarian organization. I found that so easily. But I get, maybe that's the only one. Okay, maybe you missed that, why are immigrants' incarceration rates so low, that obviously describes in great detail studies showing why the left wing believes that immigrants commit crimes at lower rates. Except that that's not true. There's a ton of them. Let's bring up this list. If he'd actually looked, he might have come across the Immigration Crime Nexus Towards an Analytic Framework for Blah, Blah, Blah by Daniel P. Mears. Or maybe Immigration and the Recent Violent Crime Drop in the United States, a Pooled Cross-Sectional Time Series Analysis of Metropolitan Areas by Leslie Williams Reed. Or the Immigration Crime Relationship, Evidence Across U.S. Metropolitan Areas by Lee Martinez and Rosenfeld. Or maybe he could have looked at Does Immigration Increase Homicide by Butcher and Peel? Or Why are incarceration rates so low? That seems like it would directly respond to your concerns there. Also, immigration and crime, what the research say. Here's the thing, that list might look like I was really looking to compile this list, but no, I have compassion for our graphics team. I stopped adding to those bullet points at a certain point because I didn't want them to have to keep making graphics for it. There are so many analyses going back literally decades of this trend describing in great detail individual neighborhoods, individual states, nationwide trends, cross-sectional things, things having to do with before and after some sort of immigration law change. All of that is freely available and easy to find on Google if you actually cared to do that. But Tucker Carlson did not care to do that. Even though he says he's very conversant with the social science, he apparently is blind, like Sandra Bullock, to all of this research that has come out for literally his entire lifetime. And is that actually the case? Is he actually blind to it? Does he actually not know that that exists? No, he is lying to you about it. He has so respect for the left, he has so respect for his own right-wing audience that he lies to them about the actual existence of this evidence. And that is why he is a garbage person. And there is only one place to put garbage people: in the trash. That's where he belongs. That and in New York City making literally tens of millions of dollars every year. Anyway, frustrating. We care about the truth here. We are not going to talk about this topic without reference to the truth, even if we have to continually respond to these BS arguments being made by people who know better. Anyway, thank you for watching, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in every day. Appreciate those of you who have rated and reviewed the podcast on iTunes. That helps us so much. I love reading those. With that said, we are going to go for the night. We'll be back tomorrow for more for you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.